Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my next interview is with another filmmaker, a documentarian, a Canadian journalist, I suppose you could say, and filmmaker, Matt Embry, who has put together a very unsettling piece in sort of the same sort of vein as Michael Moore has done with some of his films over the years from an investigative perspective. And this is a film about science. It's about family. It's about pushing back. It's about coming to terms with things that happen in life that we can't and we don't plan for. The film's called Living Proof. Matt is terrific. It's we talk about shades of gray and unknowns. We talk about alternative medicine and how he has spent most of his life as an activist, really, looking for his own answer. We talk about something called patient-funded research. Very interesting film. You're going to want to see it. It's there are insights here for everyone. And Matt is terrific on film. You get to meet his family. It's a real delight to watch things unfold in what ultimately turns out to be a really hopeful piece. Living Proof, coming right up with Matt Embry. And don't forget, it's the world premiere as well. And don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my speaking and writing. Face2FaceLive.ca as well for all of my interviews laid out there. Well over 310 or 15 now, and moving into the future with rose-colored shade glasses. I don't even know what kind of a reference was that. Some sort of Corey Hart reference. And Rabble.ca for more information there too, for podcasts and writing and blogs and keeping up to date with current events. Matt Embry coming right up, Living Proof. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here today. Matt Embry is here with us. He's a documentarian, he's a filmmaker, he's a storyteller, and he's somebody who has a very, I think, unique and compelling and challenging story to tell. And he's doing that in his new film, Living Proof, which is going to premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival. Matt, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I appreciate that too.
It's kind of nice. You know, I call the podcast Face to Face, and sometimes I actually sit face to face with people. More often than not, it's a phone interview, and today we can actually see each other. It's quite remarkable, this technology, when it works, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's great.
Calgary? You're in Calgary?
Yeah. We're based in Calgary right now.
So, Living Proof, is there a little bit of a backhanded sort of jab there in the title of the film? Is that some sort of empirical stab at the scientific community? Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing with this film?
Yeah, so I mean, we've titled The Living Proof for a number of reasons. I mean, obviously, the film follows my journey, having been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and that I'm living proof of the scientific-based strategies that I've implemented into my life to keep my MS in control. Now, that's just my story. And when you see the film, we have multiple characters, numerous patients with MS, and they are also living proof of what they've done and the strategies that they've used to control their multiple sclerosis. And that's where how the title comes. And we try to explore beyond my story and to talk to other patients around the world.
What are the things, I think part of the reason for asking the question to me, Matt, is, I mean, your film is investigative. It's an expose. It's deeply troubling. Oh, and by the way, congratulations. It's a remarkable film. The story is, it's troubling. It's engaging, but ultimately pretty hopeful. So thanks for that. Yeah. You're relying on evidence, as you say, you're living proof, and yet it's a community that is rooted supposedly in the scientific tradition that says maybe this isn't the way.
Right. Yeah, and I think that science plays a big role in this film. I mean, we're going out there, we're looking for the hard science, behind various treatments, whether it be a pharmacological approach, whether it be a vascular approach, whether it be a stem cell approach. We're looking for hard data. One of the things I do not want to be labeled as alternative medicine. I mean, I think that can be a very divisive term, very polarizing, where it's, and that's not it. I mean, and I say it openly and I've said it publicly before, if there was a drug that I felt there was significant data to prove would have a long-term effect on the progression of my disease, I would take it. Like, I'm not anti-pharma. I just haven't seen that yet. And I think that what we try to do in this is say, okay, look, I mean, there are some science behind what we would want to call alternatives, say whether that be food or exercise or other things, vitamin D in particular. I'm not a research scientist. I'm not a doctor. I can't speak with that type of authority, but we try to bring those voices to the table.
You have a really beautiful way of ending the film, and you have a really lovely way, an intimate way of working your family into this story and this film, and it really resonated for me. Your father's played a significant role in how you find yourself where you're at today. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Was it just his tenacity? Was it his desire to know? Was it his concern for his son? All of the above?
Right. I mean, my father and I have had a very strong relationship since I was very young. I mean, we were really, he's been my father, but in a lot of ways, he's been my best friend. And that went throughout as a young child and through my adolescence. And when I was diagnosed, in 1995, a long time ago, there wasn't a lot of solutions. I mean, we got to keep in mind, this was a time where, the pharmacological approach was relatively new. It was experimental. And so when he, when that was presented with him, he had to go try to find his own answers. I mean, and he's, a renowned scientific researcher in his own right. And I think he took that same scientific approach towards trying to find hope and solutions. I mean, my mother as well, was incredibly supportive of him at that time. And she was a nurse before she retired. So both my parents had a very good picture of how multiple sclerosis could play out. For me, I mean, the only thing I thought of was, say, Richard Pryor or Annette Funicello at the time, but they actually had real-world experience with how devastating this disease can be. And, my dad, he's an athlete as well, so he took that same, that scientific, that rigor, and just, went to the medical library, and this was before, the internet was a big thing, and so he actually did the photocopy. Yeah, he was doing the photocopying, and he was coming home, and even now his office is just stacks of research journals and papers. And, then my mom in particular, wanted to bring this to the world through the charity they created and trying to get the word out. And then when I, made the decision to really step out publicly, we worked together in a lot of ways to how we were going to do that. And this has been a great experience because now I get to actually work with my dad on set, which is something that is pretty new.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I bet it has. I bet it's both an asset and a liability from time to time.
Well, I think it's a big leap to go from, the medical journal, scientific, academic approach to a set, right? Those are worlds apart in a lot of ways. But we're still, we're still out there from a documentary point of view looking for answers. And that's what we do as documentary filmmakers.
Near the beginning of the film, you travel, I think, to Oxford. You travel around. You get around in this film. I guess that's one of the beauties of being a documentarian with some budget. You get to travel. But you meet with an academic, a MS researcher, who says that it's, quote, hardly ever easy to get. You hardly ever can get a black and white answer.
Yeah,
George Ebers, I believe, says that. And you start the film with this montage, this crazy, fast-paced, cross-cut montage of images and needles and people and medical shots and so on, sort of, to me, communicating the madness of I guess, the disease of actually trying to get somewhere black and white, as George said. Is it really that challenging? I mean, most of us, I suppose, have... you know, suffered through some kind of medical challenge of one kind or another, whether it's, you know, a family member or ourselves. But I'm kind of interested to know a little bit more about that. I mean, your story is particularly troubling. And I guess the people that you follow in the film.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Ebers, I thought, did a great job describing how trying to find answers, it's mostly you find shades of gray, right? I think that's what he said, right? There's no black and white answers. And I think that there are a lot of unknowns when it comes to MS. You know, when you're first diagnosed, you don't know the course that it's going to take. I mean, some patients, you know, have relapsing remitting and can live for many years without any issues. Some patients hit a progressive form and go downhill very quickly. The range of symptoms that, you know, that patients can face can, you know, is up and down. It can be, you know, absolutely horrible to somewhat minor. And when it comes to, say, finding the cause, that's still relatively unknown. And it's been, you know, over X number of hundred of years since the actual discovery of the disease. When it comes to a cure, there's no cure. So that, and this is where we get into a gray area, okay? So, and then this gray area is, okay, so what are your best strategies? So you go, okay, well, we don't necessarily know. So then you think, okay, what's safe? What's cost effective? And where is some scientific backing to some of the thinking, right? And so that's where we try to get into. And we try to show that. We say, okay, well, what can you do now as an MS patient or if you have a loved one? Like, what can you do now, right? And so that's where we really try to go and find those answers. And at the end of the day, I didn't want to create a film that's like, that. This is a whole gray area. This is MS is a mess and it's just awful, right? From all the issues that we bring up in the film, because there are some disturbing issues. And I wanted to create a film that gave people hope to say, yeah, there are a lot of problems in this medical ecosystem. There's no question. There's issues on many layers. But what can you do? And then what can we do as an MS population to get that word out there and to get together and create a community and start sharing our stories?
You know, it's really interesting to me. This is any great documentary to me is layered. There's always more going on than meets the eye. You can go back for a second viewing, a third viewing, and you can find more than you found the first time around. You have those aha moments, and I think it's one of the reasons I love storytelling and film. But for me, and it just hit me as you were explaining where you were going with that, this is about taking your life into your own hands, in a sense. This is about choice. This is about responsibility. I mean, that's a profoundly existential and sort of philosophical statement.
Right. And I think it's really important, and I'm really glad that you pulled that out of the film, because MS is the flashpoint. It's the disease that we talk about in this film. One of the goals in how I created this narratively and structurally and shooting it is I wanted to create a film where this is not just about MS. If you're diagnosed with any type of neurological condition, that there's so many unknowns, if it's cancer, I don't know, whatever it is, you have to make a decision to go out there and find answers. It's not going to be just handed to you, right? And I think where the world has really changed, and I hope the film also shows that, is that when I was diagnosed, the internet was relatively new. Now you can go out there and you can mobilize and you can create these online communities and start learning and sharing information far, far quickly, far more quicker than you could. And you've got access to these resources.
I think it's Dr. Ebers near the end of the film who says, you know, you've got to follow the money. And it almost sounds cliche in a way.
Right.
You know, we've all seen the Law and Order episodes, the spy thrillers and so on. And it's, you know, the classic cliche. It's all about the money. Was that one of the more disturbing things for you as you started to peel back some of these layers to see how that to see that disconnect between the work that was actually getting done and the money that was actually being raised.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when we did say follow the money, and I agree with you, that is somewhat of a cliche term, but when we did follow the money, we really discovered that it was so much about the money, and we really questioned about how much of this is about the people and the patients, right? And that became, I agree with you, that was a disturbing realization to see how much money was on the table and to start wondering, and you know, we don't want to make accusations, but start revealing, okay, you know, with this much money at play, like, why aren't there fewer wheelchairs, canes, or walkers? Like, why do these things continue? Why are our charities spending money the way they do? Why aren't these questions being, you know, brought to the forefront of our mainstream media? And then when you look at how much money it is, it's significant. This is billions of dollars a year.
Are you looking? Would you say, Matt, that you're hopeful for a coming together? I'm going to use your word earlier. You don't want to be labeled alternative, but are you looking for a bridge between that kind of pharmacological approach and an alternative approach? One of the guys you interview near the end of the film again says it's hard to find people. I think says something to the effect of it's hard to find people to trust or to tell the truth.
Right.
And it's not either or, right? This is kind of a both and. I think.
Right, and I think that bridge that you speak of is exactly what we're looking for, right? I mean, in particular, if you look since we started the film, like since we started this journey, and since I started the MSO, like I believe if you go to the MS Society of Canada's website, they've got links to diet. I mean, I believe that's relatively new. Like I can't say right. For sure, but that's great. You know, when you look to the National MS Society in the United States of America, they've given $1 million to Dr. Terry Wallace to start investigating diet. Well, this is great news. I mean, I think that we see that the hundreds of millions the MS Society of Canada has raised, and we estimated at the time when the film started that it was less than $100,000 they spent on diet research. Well, that's a significant problem. So if we can start seeing these metrics start to change, and that, organizations like MS Society's got on board and said, okay, you know, there's other people doing other things. What is this? We're now doing research. That would be the ideal. I mean, that's where we can use these organizations and structures to educate people. And that's really the genesis of this years ago, where you said, look, we believe there's information out there that the MS societies and neurologists aren't necessarily sharing. Well, how do you get that message out?
Yeah. So you're not the kind of guy who if somebody said, oh, if you put a rock under your pillow, it's going to make you feel better.
Right.
I mean, you're open to the pill, you're open to the needle, but it's got to be a dialogue, it's got to be a conversation. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, and the thing is, it goes back to those simple metrics, those checklists that we talked about earlier. You know, is it safe? Okay, is it inexpensive? And does it work? I mean, is there evidence that it's going to have a long term effect on my disease? Right, and that's this is what we really question. And the thing is, I don't know. I can't speak for other diseases, but I think, what diseases are getting better? Like, where are these cures? So and then that's what we go back to. It's like, where are these outcomes? And are these outcomes being met? And why aren't we demanding it of the pharmacological industry and our societies to be talking about this?
So again, this is about more going on than meets the eye. This is about accountability. This is about transparency. This is about telling the truth.
Right.
Or telling a more comprehensive story.
Right. And it's about, it's also about sharing information to say, okay, now you've learned this information that we've shared, maybe you should go ask your neurologist or your doctor some more questions if you feel that that's what you're looking for.
Do you find that since, making the film, the doctors you visited, the conversations you've had, do you think the medical community is slowly becoming more open? Are you encouraged, or are you not quite there yet, Matt?
I can't say I'm quite there yet, right? I mean, it's really hard to assess that, right? I mean, we hear stories anecdotally that yes, people have visited their neurologist and they talked about diet and all these types of things, but then we hear anecdotally that they don't. So it's really hard to say from my point of view.
Tell me about how you were brought into this conversation about diet and lifestyle, because I think this is a lesson for us all, whether we have a neurological disease or not. Right. You know, we need to be more intentional about the way we take care of our bodies, or the way we don't. We need to be more aware of the fact that maybe not everything we do is the right way to go. This happened for you. This was an author, Judy Graham, I believe.
Yeah, Dr.
Is that it, yeah. Can you talk about that? Because it's a really quite a touching piece, the way you tease it out in the film.
Yeah, I mean, she, I believe, don't quote me on this, but I think her book was Naturally Healing Multiple Sclerosis or something like that, and that was written like quite a long time ago. And I believe what had happened is after my diagnosis, one of my high school teachers reached out pretty quickly and shared, I believe it was that book, with my family. And I think that was the trigger point for my dad to start really chasing the diet avenue at that time. This is 22 years ago now, so this is a long time ago. I know diets are becoming far more fashionable now, but back then, if you talked about going dairy-free, gluten-free at a restaurant, it was like you were on a different planet. So, and then you also got to keep in mind, I was pretty young. So, my dad was the researcher. I mean, here's a guy who was also my basketball coach in high school. So, what he told me to do, I listened. So, if he said, look, this is important, you really should consider your diet, I did it. And so, I took it very seriously. And I also have had a pretty good sense of the outcomes. And I, 22 years later, I'm still on the diet religiously. And I feel fantastic. You know, and I think that what's interesting is, like, even on Netflix right now, there's a film, What the Health, I think it's called. And this is about this is about veganism. I watched it on the plane. I was flying to Toronto. I thought, this is great. I mean, here's another guy out there, and he's asking these similar questions, and he's visiting these different charities and organizations. He's confronting doctors. He's starting to ask the hard questions about diet, right? And then, like, he's questioning the four food groups, right, which is something we don't get into in this film. But, when we talk about eliminating dairy and wheat and these types of things, I mean, these become questions for people and patients, right? And the thing is, we are always open to more science, right? Like, let's just keep doing the research, right? And let's just see if the outcomes either support or do not support our conclusions, right? I mean, like I said, we're not going to say this is the magic bullet. We're going to say, here's what our hypothesis is, and here's what's occurred 22 years later. You decided.
You decide if it works for you.
Yeah, it's up to you. If you want to do it, then go for it. But it's relatively, it's safe, and it's inexpensive, and it's cheap. Yeah.
When you're interviewing Judy, it's quite an intimate conversation. She, I think, had been diagnosed an MS patient for about 43 years. Is that right?
It was 45 years at the time, yeah.
A long, long time. She says, and I think, she was including you in this, but we're swimming against the tide. This is a hard diet. This is a challenge. This is a daily challenge. And I mean, it strikes me as a very lonely kind of path to have to take. So I guess my question to you is, she talks about fear. As well, terror, actually, that keeps her in line, and you kind of cut to a great shot of you out running, that, again, that discipline, that rigor, that almost that scientific approach to your health. What do you do with your discouragement? Is it your family? You lean on your family? How do you get recharged? Is there a community? Is there a guy or a woman you call to commiserate with?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, obviously, it's going to affect me personally too, right? And I think that it's naive for patients to think that it's ever, you're not going to think about it. I mean, it's one of those situations where, 20, you wake up and you slept on your arm, you're fearful that you've now lost your arm, right? You get a little tingle or something that the average human being does, your brain will jump to that horrible conclusion that, it's back again. Right. And I think we're, an interesting point you're making, and I think that one that we try to, I wish I would have maybe explored more in the film, is that this new online community is very inspirational. Right. So it's like if I even look at my Facebook, like today, right, we've had, over 100,000 views to the trailer. We've had hundreds of comments.
Amazing.
There's not one negative comment. Like, we can't find one. And like, we scour for this stuff, right? Because I'm really interested. Like, I'd be open to the person who posts on it, you know, Matt, just so you know, I did this diet and program religiously and it didn't work. Like, I want to know, and I'll call me, like, we'll talk about it. And it's like, okay, well, what happened? Like, what were you on it? Because one thing, and there's a scene in the film where we go after this issue where compliance is a huge problem. Where even we have a character there who talks about, I don't want to like spoil it, but you know, he talks about how he's on the program, this, and then all of a sudden he's unknowingly consuming dairy protein every day.
It's a great moment in the film, actually. Yeah, it's one of my faves.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying his best, like, and he thinks he's on it, and you know, he's a smart guy, but it's like, wow, that, you know, the way it was labeled, it just snuck in, and he, you know, he think, whoa, like, you know, that's scary. And then you have no idea, you know, how many patients I meet who tell me, you know, I'm on the diet or something. And then I start to dig and go, okay, wait a minute. Like, well, you can't eat that. And like, maybe you should go check the PDFs again or read what we're trying to put up on the website and that type of thing. Right. But again, it's that compliance is a major problem, I think, with diet. And I think that that's not only for MS. I mean, you look at heart and stroke disease, you know, we know that diet could affect that. And it's like, how do you get people to change their lifestyle, right? Smoking, like, maybe it's just getting people.
Yeah, you need somebody. It seems to me you need somebody to somebody who hopefully loves you, who's going to hold you accountable. Whether that's your partner, your wife, your husband, your son, your daughter, your mom, your dad. You know, or hopefully maybe one day it'll be your doctor.
Matt. Right, it's true, right? And another thing too, we didn't put it in the film as well, but in the early stages, there, Dr. Roy Swank. I don't know if you know. We don't talk too much about it, but he did the early diet research, like way back, right? And he had a graph.
You refer to it in the film.
Yeah, he had a graph that showed people who changed their diet versus people who didn't. And the graph showed that if you changed your diet, you more or less, I think, went down one neurograde over 30 years. And if you didn't, you went down between 5 and 6. We had that graph on the fridge. It was literally on the fridge at home. And I think it's still in my parents' basement up. But it was that kind of daily, okay, here's how important this can be.
Yeah, just that daily reminder.
Right.
One of the doctors, one of the surgeons, the researchers that you interview talked about a, I don't know, again, help me out here. Is it an alternative therapy, stem cell? My father I had mentioned to you before the tape started rolling. My dad had Parkinson's for years. He was very hopeful from a stem cell perspective. And I mean, I interviewed Dr. Anthony Lang not that long ago from Toronto General Hospital, a neurologist, about, you know, the steps forward. And I mean, he had to admit to me after some 35 years, they don't know that much more. I mean, they know a ton. Discovery and revelations all the time, and what a fascinating world to work in. But the brain, to say that it's a complicated place is an understatement. But this guy said that he was extremely optimistic about this new treatment, stem cell treatment, but just couldn't get the funding for it.
Right.
Is that changing? I mean, can we at least be alongside of him extremely optimistic, not only about the treatment, but maybe where we're heading?
Well, I mean, I think this is where the activism piece has to come in right now, because I don't think it is changing. I mean, I'm sure if you called him today, I mean, but that doctor in particular talks about patient-funded research, and that's what's occurring, right? And I think he was very articulate in describing where, you know, the specific type of stem cell therapy he was offering, he wasn't working with genetically modified or, you know, created stem cells. He was dealing with the patient's stem, like the patient's own stem cells. Therefore, he couldn't create a product. Therefore, there was no money to be made, so the commercial interest wasn't there. So the problem is I think he articulated is how do you raise money for these projects, right? It's a big problem.
Yeah, and now we're back to sort of chasing the money in a sense.
Right.
I want to talk about the festival and you're coming here in a couple of days, really, in truth. But tell me a little bit more about mshope.com.
Yes.
Or would you rather people find out about that in the film?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd love them to find, because it's, like I said, there's two different hats you wear now, right, in a way, and it's kind of complicated. It's a little bit complicated for me to walk, because I'm a filmmaker, but I'm also an advocate, right? So you know, mshope.com was a website that I created, you know, and trying my absolute best to share the strategies that I've used for years to keep my MS under control and try to make it as user-friendly as possible. and I'm dedicated to it's going to be a free open resource, right? Until I pass away and leave this earth, that's the goal. And I think that was one of the other big goals of it, you know, from the beginning of all of this was, how can we create content and projects that are going to live on past me, right? Because I think back to when I was 19, if there would have been a website like mshope.com where I could watch the movie like Living Proof and seeing, you know, someone who did really well, that would have been huge for me and really inspiring, right? But those faces didn't exist, but now they do. And so, you know, that's so much of my goal is to think about that 19-year-old, you know, boy or girl who get diagnosed and they hit the website and they're looking and all of a sudden they can see something that, you know, this isn't all. And Terry Walsh is the best where, you know, the diagnosis that this is all downhill is just not correct.
Yeah, there's power in numbers. There's community out there to be found.
Right. Right.
World premiere.
That's right. Yeah. So we have the film outside of say cast and crew. Yeah. Some people we tested it on. Obviously, this film has not been screened yet. So this will be the world premiere. Will be for the public September 12th.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. And are you a little nervous?
You know, yeah, to be honest, yeah, I'm a little bit nervous, right? I mean, there's obviously going to be a lot of friendly faces in the audience.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, but it's, you know, when you stand up and, you know, share your story, it's not easy, right? For multiple reasons.
Well, Matt, and it's just so personal and so intimate and so beautifully done. And thank you for, I mean, it really is a gift. I mean, I kind of watch every film as a gift from the filmmaker, you know, as crazy and maybe as corny and as idealistic as that might sound. But your film really is, it's an important work. It's eye-opening. It's, as I said, it's compelling and challenging. It's disturbing, but ultimately, wonderfully hopeful as well. So thanks for that, and thanks for your time today. We've been talking to Matt Embry and about his new film, Living Proof, premiering at the world premiering at the Toronto International Film Festival coming up. Matt, thanks so much for your time. I hope we can maybe do a part two down the road.
That would be excellent, and thank you so much for actually taking the time to watch it with a critical, thoughtful eye. Like, I really appreciate that.
And oh, you're welcome. Message.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.